Happy Friday, ladies and gentlemen. It's a beautiful day out there, and I hope your day is going well for you. This is episode number 121 of Shut Up and Grind with your host, yours truly, Robert B. Foster. So if you are new to the show, we talk about how to step into your greatness. And we first have to define what that means to you, because everyone has a different definition of success. Like, for someone like me, I don't need a big house, fancy cars, jewelry, any of that. Not knocking the people that need that stuff. You need it, damn it, go get it. But just for me personally, mine was just freedom. Like, I'm a single parent of five kids, and I just want to be able to go to every single thing that my kids go to. That's it. That's all I want. I want to be in control of my schedule. When I want to travel, I want to go. And I don't want anything holding me back from being as free as I can possibly be. So that's what it means for me. And so we want to know, what does it mean for you? So as you guys come in and you watch this, feel free to make comments. If you guys have any questions, we'll answer them for you here live. If you're on the live stream, if you're watching it on the replay, then we can chit chat in the comment section, as this is streamed live on my Facebook page, on my business page, and on YouTube as well. So why should you listen to me if you are new to the show? Let me introduce myself. I started doing workshops and doing groups where I'm getting up in front of others, like outside of the gym setting, and talking about resilience and perseverance and goal setting and vision and taking action. You should know what 1 hour of your time is worth. You should know the value that you bring to the marketplace. You know what your passion is. It starts with clarity of vision. If you don't have the clarity of vision, whatever next thing you get, you're not going to see it through because you don't have the clarity of vision. So the point of my pain was being told you will never run or jump again. And all that stuff, I was like, you know what? Like, I want to be able to take this even bigger.
If you know why you do what you do, you have to know how to charge for what you do. That's how you're going to change your life, and that's how you're going to leave a legacy for your children and your family. You got to know your worth.
All right. So now that you get to know me a little bit better, let me just talk quickly about why I do this. So I'm not just someone who just wants to be a content creator and wants to have millions of followers. I do this because I care. I care about you. I care about how you think about yourself. I care about the energy that you project. I care about if you're struggling and you're not sure if there's a way out of it. I care about you because it helps everything. When you are feeling good about yourself and when you are shining your light at its absolute brightest, everyone around you benefits. Everyone. So it doesn't do anything to the world in the grand scope of things for you to play small and not be your best self. So what happens along the way? We meet people that try to tell us that we're less than. We meet people that tell us we can't do something. Or like you heard in my video where I was told I would never run a jump again. And I'm about to do race number 138 next Saturday. So we got to stop taking people's labels and people's definitions for our lives. And we got to start reclaiming our own power and step into our greatness. So that's why I started this podcast. And that's why I bring on guests from all over the world. I've had guests from as far east as Australia, as far south as South America, and everybody wants the same thing. Everybody wants to be happy, and everybody wants to be as free as possible. And so as I bring each guest on, you guys all know, we get into their backstory because everybody has a backstory. Everybody goes through something at some point. Like, I could sit here and do this show about just the stuff I've gone through in my almost 47 years of life. But bringing on other people from, you know, whether it's different races, different religions, different genders, different beliefs, said people living in different parts of the country, you get to hear so many different perspectives on how people reach their level of success. And today's going to be no different. So my guest today is a doctor turned entrepreneur. And he had his share of obstacles that he had to face. But we're not going to hear it from me. We're going to hear it from him. So help me welcome to the show, Dr. Jay Feldman. Welcome,
Robert,
sir.
Thank you for that introduction, man. It's so good to be here. So good to share with your audience. Hopefully, if they can take a few things away from this conversation, then it's a huge win. You know, like you said, I've been through my own fair share of obstacles that I've had to overcome and have overcome. And now I'm at a really good place. So if we can get even one of your listeners there through this conversation, through some of the things that they're going to learn along the way, it's going to be worth my day. And again, thank you so much for having me here. Excited to kind of get into it with you.
Awesome. Yeah, thank you for taking the time and the willingness to share your story. Because a lot of people, they go through these storms and they let the storm almost shame them into being afraid of talking about what they went through rather than finding the power in it. Because I said, we all get knocked down at some point, but it's the comeback story. That's the part that hooks people in. Because anybody can sit around and talk about all the crap that they had to go through in life. And my question is always, what are you going to do? Okay, so that happened. What are you going to do? Like, how are you going to rebuild yourself? How are you going to rebrand yourself? How are you going to forgive yourself for what happened? And how are you going to take this and motivate other people? Like, that's the purpose of telling your stories. So as we dive into yours, let's start with first, who is Jay?
Good question. So Jay, talking the kind of the third person here, honestly, I'm someone who doesn't fit in a box. You know, like you, I heard your introduction. I value freedom and empathy kind of above everything else in life. You know, what makes me tick, I guess, is just getting better personally, growing as a person, being able to serve more people, adventures, animals, business. That kind of describes me and what I'm about, health, medicine, being able to kind of say and convey kind of my own vision of life and how I can help people. It's all about giving back and growing. I like to get better. I like to grow the business, and I like to serve people. And hopefully I can do some of that today with you.
Awesome. Love it. Great answer. I like that you're someone who doesn't fit in a box, because I always say I burned the damn box. Yeah. it's like there is no box anymore. I set that baby on fire.
Cause I burned it long ago.
Yes. Yeah. Cause so many people try to clip your wings. You know, they try to stuff you into that box, say, no, you should think like this. You should behave like this. Or at your age, you should be doing this. It's like, who the hell are you to tell me what I should be doing? You know, it's up to me to define the direction of what I want to do. And yeah, were there roadblocks along the way? Have I done things that maybe I'm not proud of? Absolutely. But I look them right in the face and be like, yes, I did this. But then, you know, like, just because, exactly, I did this doesn't mean that I'm stuck as that person.
You know, man, and that was so relevant in medicine. Yes. You know, I went through medical school. I went through some residency training. And the whole time, it's them trying to put you in a box. It's one dialogue. It's one passion. It's one job. And everybody is kind of on the same wavelength. And I never felt like that was my wavelength. That was not my people.
Yes.
I had varied interests. I wanted to travel. I wanted to hang out with my friends. I wanted to work on my businesses while I was studying medicine, which was a crazy idea for a lot of my professors and my coworkers. They didn't quite understand. I wanted to do social media and create content. Again, something that you just can't do in that profession. So, you know, like you said, you got to burn the box. If you want to live on your own terms and pursue your passions, if especially if they're varied, you have to own it. You have to own your life. You have to own your business. You have to own your finances in order to own your freedom. And that's what I've learned. That's what I practice now. And hopefully we can inspire some other people to live like that as well.
Absolutely. So growing up, did you always want to be a doctor?
Yeah, you know, I guess starting from early high school, I always had that influence. I grew up in like a middle-class Jewish household. Didn't have any doctors in my family, but grandma and mom were really pushing me to do that. I always had the smarts to do it. I didn't really just, you know, figure out that I need, that I wanted to be a doctor until college. A lot of people wouldn't know this. I got arrested back when I was early in high school. And that pretty much prevented me from getting into any really good college. Although I had pretty good grades, that pretty much took me out of the running. So I went to like a third tier school here in Florida. And at that point,
we're not gonna just gloss over the arrest. What'd you do?
So walked into somebody's garage, took a bottle of liquor, walked out. Ended up being the guy who was running for sheriff of my city at the time. 3 months later, a cop pulled me out of school, asked me if I did it. I'm like, yeah. And boom, burglary of an occupied home.
Wow.
Third degree felony. Yeah. Okay. It was obviously going back, I would have said, no, I'll need a lawyer here. Yeah, and I probably would have walked away skate clean, but then what would have happened? You know, how would that have changed my life? I think maybe the fact that that did happen and put me into a corner, everyone given up, I got nowhere to go but up. I could have folded, crumbled, and just, you know, taken that new life as a felon. I was on probation for a year. Yeah. But that's when I'm like, no, I'm going to get my shit together. I'm going to prove everyone wrong.
Yes.
And that's exactly what I did. I changed my major to pre-med. I got straight A's. I wasn't allowed to smoke or drink that year because of my probation. So I just went laser focused. I'm like, I'm going to be successful against all odds, against, you know, everybody's judgment. And that's exactly what I did. From there, it was a straight shot to medical school.
I love that, against all odds. See, like that's a missing art form nowadays. Is so many people, you know, they'll train the box, but they take that first hit and then done. You know,
it's yeah.
Like there's never a straight path. And like, that's one of the biggest things I try to convey to people, is there's never a straight path. And so as you're going along, you're going to hit roadblocks. But as I said earlier, what you going to do? Okay, so this happened. Okay, how are you going to keep moving forward? Okay, now this happened. How are you going to keep moving forward? This one doesn't support me. Okay, how are you going to keep moving forward? You know, like yeah. you got to have that level of resilience to see it all the way through. When I started my fitness business, I didn't have a clear plan. I had bad credit and no savings. But I knew I had a talent for connecting with people and to making them feel invincible. So I was like, if I just lean into that, good things are going to happen at some point. You know, it really wasn't a build it and they will come mentality. It was like just one person at a time, just one person at a time. And then what went from a hobby in my garage turned into a 5,000 square foot facility. And when I tell you, a year prior, I was like, I don't know how I'm going to do this. I was like, so I just have to do it day by day. And I built up enough of a clientele that once we opened up the facility, we were profitable from the first day because we opened with 150 clients already. You know, whereas most people go into debt,
yeah.
You know, putting all the money into the gym, and then they have no clients, so they end up closing within 18 months. You know.
Yeah, and you know, one other thing about high achievers that I've kind of learned through one my own podcast, my studies, my reading. Is that a lot of people who have built giant companies, who have done amazing things and, you know, achieved fame, they need some kind of motivation to latch onto, to keep going, to work those like 12, 16 hour days that I had to work to start my company. Yep. And get it to where it is. And that motivation that I was latching onto was all of those times that I was backed into a corner and poor and didn't want to go back there, didn't want to prove other people right. And if those things didn't happen, I'm not sure I would have had that motivation. And, you know, same thing with you and your facility. I'm sure you went through some times where you were not so proud of yourself, did not like who you were, or maybe something even happened. And your motivation was, I'm not going back there. And I've noticed that with a lot of people. And that's the same reason people who grew up like privileged without any real adversity in their life don't necessarily have that same motivation to latch onto.
Yes.
So for people who have gone through it, who might be listening to this and need that spark of motivation, man, you got to use that. You got to use all of that bullshit that you've gone through, latch onto it and let it drive you to those 14-hour days, not work, you know, not having fun on the weekends. I worked on my weekends every weekend for years.
Yep.
Until I finally got to a point now where I still work my ass off, but able to finally enjoy myself a bit. But it's that adversity that drives me, and it's that adversity that drives a lot of high achievers. So it's something to use, something to use.
Yeah, like even working within the gym setting, one of my clients will come up to me and be like, "Oh, Rob, you know, I'm kind of in a rut." And I'm like, "How much weight have you lost? Like 25 pounds. Do you remember how you felt 25 pounds ago?" Like, "Yeah." "Well, you're on a collision course and heading right back there." You know, it's like, I don't understand why that's not enough for you. So as I said earlier, I spent 20 years in the restaurant industry. And I mean, I was an athlete my entire life, but there was one time where I let myself go because my ex abandoned myself and my infant son. So, well, he was like pre-toddler. He was 13 months old. She just vanished, you know? So my life changed. I was like, okay. And so I ended up gaining weight. And it was just like a gradual thing where I didn't even really notice. I was in the restaurant this one day, and one of the waiters comes and whacks me on my gut. He's like, "Foster, what's going on?" And it wasn't until later that night when I got out of the shower after work and I caught my reflection in the mirror. I was like, "Wow." I was like, "Just 4 years ago, you were an all-American athlete. What the hell is that?" And I decided at that moment, like, I will never, ever be over 200 pounds again. Never. I was 228 pounds. I'm 6'1". So, like, people are like, "Well, that's not that." Yeah, but for me, that was 40-plus pounds heavier than I had ever been. And I felt that one time. 4.5 months, I knocked off the 45 pounds. And I said, "I'll never go back there." And I had 7 surgeries. And I was on crutches at Planet Fitness. I was on crutches walking up and down hills. I'm like, "I will not get over 200 pounds. All because I felt that embarrassment and that shame once. And I've never gone back there. So you're absolutely right. Like, you have to take that stuff that you went through, remember how it made you feel, and then do whatever you can to never feel that again.
Yeah. You look back at it, you say, "Can't change it. And now what? Now what am I going to do?" And the same lesson applies to so many areas in life. You mentioned your health and fitness. You mentioned going through that traumatic breakup. I had something similar. It wasn't, you know, right after a baby. I'm sorry that happened. But I got my heart broken. And it was because, you know, it wasn't because of her. It was because of me. It was because I wasn't capable of maintaining a relationship like that. So I learned how to. As soon as that happened, I picked up books. I went out and practiced with some friends, and I learned read the Law of Attraction, read The Game, and went out and became a, you know, quote unquote alpha male, and kind of learned social structure, learned social systems. And it's translated into sales. It's translated into a lot of areas of life. A fitness, thank God, has always come, you know, relatively easy, and it's always been very important to me. But I coach a lot of people on their health as well. And I see the same thing repeating itself all the time. And they always mention the ones who have overcome their own health obstacles and got better, a period where they felt like they were at rock bottom, and they just looked in the mirror and hit a wall. Yeah. And that's what it is in the fitness world, in the health world. It's when you look at yourself and you feel yourself and you're just like, "Never again. I never want to feel like this again. I'm never going to look like this again." And you latch onto that for motivation, just like you did. And you do something about it. You change your diet, go to the gym, and you just think about how horrible you felt and looked that one time in the mirror, that level of embarrassment when somebody called you a fat shit or some whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it's whatever you got to latch onto. It's whatever is going to motivate you to make that change. And a lot of times it's something horrible that's going to motivate you, just like it does in business, relationships, and health.
Yep. And you said the key words. People felt like they were at rock bottom. And I say, obviously, I don't want people to be at rock bottom, but those are the best people to work with because they are fed up with where they are and they want to get out of that place. So when I do my initial consultations at the gym or even in business coaching, I take a deep dive into what their current situation is. And it's like, "Are you tired of being there?" You know, because if you're content, I'm not the right coach for you. Like, I don't mess with content. So it's like, if you are ready to put the work in and to change your life, then I can work with you. I said, but I'm not going to be texting you with like, no, like when it's time for you to show up, show up. You know, when it's time to put the work in, put the work in. You know, when it's time to fill out your journal, fill out the journal. It's like, I'm going to give you the framework. You have to be prepared to do the work. You know, so those are the people that really have the best transformations. So the people who are content, those are the ones that yo-yo.
Yep, exactly. It's trauma that really motivates somebody to make change. Yeah. You know, being content, not having it be an absolute priority, you don't have a choice but to get better. That's the enemy. And there's really a couple different types of people. There's somebody who looks in the mirror and experiences that trauma and makes a change. And then there's the ones that are like, all right, this is me now, I guess, accepts it. Yes. And then obviously there's the downward spiralers who continue to digress. And man, if those are the people in your life, and this is a huge factor too, right? Because it's the people you surround yourself with are going to be the biggest influence on your behavior. If you're surrounded by people who you can tell are in a downward spiral, you got to save yourself before you save your friend that's drowning. I get out of there. I'm very picky in particular about the relationships that I surround myself with, my friends, my business partners, yeah. Even my girlfriends. If I can tell they're content or they're in a downward spiral and their priorities are not straight, I do not want that to rub off on my lifestyle, rub off on my motivation. And I'll make the conscious choice to cut that tie. You want to be surrounded by people who want to get better, who want to lose that weight, who want to build their business. And I promise you surround yourself with those people, you will too. And it's one of the biggest changes that you can make in your life to affect your own motivation. It's really hard to change your motivation, your level of motivation. It's hard to manufacture a trauma. What you can manufacture is your surroundings and your environment, the people around you, your city, where you live. All of those things play a huge role.
I tell my clients, I don't let them say motivation in the gym. It's like, because motivation is external.
Yes.
I said, so we're not even going to talk about that. I was like, when your alarm goes off, you should be able to get your ass out of bed and get to the gym because you have a goal. It's like, that's all you need. You don't need anything else. I said, so we're going to look within. We're going to look for determination. We're going to look for drive. Like, those things come from within. Motivation's manufactured. So, because I guarantee you, if you were dangling out of a window, you wouldn't say, well, you know, if I had a tiger came on right now, I'd be able to pull myself up and save myself. It's like, no, you would summon the power to save yourself. You know, so it's like the power is already there. Let it out. Like, don't look for something else to let it out. Like, people tell me all the time in the gym that I show off. I'm like, I don't show off. I'm working within my capability. It's like, just because you can't do a 50-inch box jump doesn't mean I shouldn't. You know, it's like don't you know, discourage me from flying. So
no, they're rationalizing your level of motivation because they don't understand it.
Yes, I like that.
They can't dig deep and do 110% at the gym every time that they show up. And I get that. Sometimes I'm not feeling it either. But then I see the people who are, and I get it. It's a whole different, it's a priority thing. And you can't manufacture priority. You can't manufacture motivation. It comes from somewhere. I don't know where it comes from, where you dig deep, why it's such a priority to you, but it is. And I have a hard time at the gym going 150% every time too. But I've never had a health trauma. So I bet if I did, I'd be able to latch onto that and go 150% every time. So I bet that plays a huge role. But you're absolutely right about not being able to manufacture motivation. It comes from somewhere else.
Yeah, like, and people have to step into their strength. It's like, my strength is I'm fast and I can jump high, even at my age. But there's someone else, maybe their strength is strength, you know, maybe deadlifting and bench pressing and squatting, maybe that's their strength, you know, whereas like me, I'm an obstacle course racer. So I can do like the monkey bars and the rings and all that other stuff. And just because someone else can't do it, like, that doesn't diminish you in any way, you know? So it's like, there's a guy in the gym that I train at. He's a muscle guy, you know, I almost said meathead, but he's a muscle guy.
You can say meathead, the big dude.
Yeah, he is. It's like, but he deadlifts like 600 plus pounds. And I can do the most I've done, I think, was 430. But I have no desire to go beyond that. Yeah.
Medical perspective, I've seen so many people injured at the gym doing the same workout. It's always deadlifting. Everybody who throws a disc is always during a deadlift, trying to pound on a bunch of weight. Even bodybuilders with good form wearing a belt trying to deadlift, it's always the deadlift. That's always the exercise.
Yeah. My thing is, if you need external things, it's too heavy. There's people that they put bands on, they got braces on, you know, the weight belt. Like, if you have to do all of that, that's too heavy for you. That's why I cap myself 600
pounds on your lumbar disc.
Yeah, because I can do 400 and maintain proper form, you know. So I was like, I don't really need to go beyond that. And even still, when I train, I usually don't go above 275, you know, just for reps. And I don't do any more than 5 reps at a time. Cause like that's just not my wheelhouse. Like I said, as an obstacle course racer, you know, I just need to have endurance. Like I don't really need to say, oh, I can do X, Y, Z. Like I don't need any of that. So, but Ziz put up a good one here. Like you learn your strengths from introspection, and that's
100%
spot on. Absolutely.
Yeah, and that kind of goes along with what I was saying. You know, I also am a victim of this. I'm at the gym listening to motivational speeches on YouTube, listening to Schwarzenegger and people talk you up and talk about, you know, dig deep. There's people doing this. What really motivates me? I think of my breakup. I think of my heartbreak, and like, would things have been different if I was in better shape? And I'm not ever going to let that happen again. That's my introspection. I look in and I latch onto that, and that's what pushes me through the next set, through the next mile. So for anyone who has something like that, like a memory that they can latch onto, that's huge. Figure out what your own motivations are, even if they're selfish motivations. Even like, you don't have to tell people this stuff. This is what motivates you, what makes you tick. It's important to know that about yourself.
Yes, I tell people. I mean, I definitely agree with that 100%. But I just take it a step further, and I tell people it's not about you. Like you have a circle of people that look at you. So why can't you be the example? You know, it's like, be the example. See, now that's gonna give you a push to do what you need to do, because people are depending on you. You know, so like whenever new people start, I always say, try to bring in a friend to go with you. So now you have someone depending on you. So now when that alarm goes off, you can't just shut it off because someone's meeting you at the gym. You know, because it's very easy for people to give up on themselves. It's very easy. Oh, yeah. Like, I don't feel like it today. But it's different when, you know, you got the buddy call and say, hey, we hitting up the gym today. Like my son and one of my nephews, they just started going to the gym now, where I've been telling myself, like, dude, like, I work in a gym. You know, I run classes out of a gym. Just come train with me. And he just didn't want to do it. You know,
so that's the biggest value add in having a trainer. It's the accountability aspect.
Yes.
And same thing goes for every aspect of life, but health and fitness specifically. It's somebody saying, listen, you paid me. You asked me to do this. You're going to freaking be here. You're going to work your ass off during this because I said so, and because you're accountable to do that.
Yes.
And there's nothing more motivating than that, I think. And the reason I would pay $100 a session for a trainer is, you better believe I'm going to show up. You better believe I'm going to get my money's worth. I'm going to have a hell of a workout. Yep. And I don't want to disappoint this guy. this guy's over here yelling at me, expecting me to put up this weight, do more reps. He believes in me.
Yes.
And I don't want to let him down. So I love trainers. I love group classes. I'm a big proponent, and I also try and mix it up. You know, I do yoga once a week, I do HIIT once a week, and I do weight training 4 days a week. Love it's good it. To have a little variety in there too. But
I said to someone the other day, they were doing a wall sit. I believe it was a 2-minute wall sit, and so it was like the last 20 seconds or so. I glance over right as one of the women came off the wall. And I was like, what are you doing? She's like, oh, where were you the last, you know, I held it this whole time. Where were you then? I said, this is what you pay me for. I said, you pay me to catch you when you come off the wall. Like, that's why you're here. You know, it's like people don't understand that. It's like, yeah, you know, I praise them too enough, but I make them earn the praise. You know, it's like, I'm not an overpraiser. You know, because like we're like you just celebrate absolutely everything. It's like no, it's like you know when they get a high five out of me, they know that they kicked ass. So like I tell them all the time, why is my belief in you more than your own self belief? Like why is that? Like I know that you can hold that 2-minute wall sit. You don't know that you can.
Yeah, you know? And so, they cared enough to show up.
Yeah,
and that's half the battle. The other half is the. Actually there being able to push through the pain mentally. And you really do have to kind of dig deep and find a reason to do it.
Yes.
And you know, not everyone has it. And I don't know how to manufacture that. If it did, I'd be a mole bazillionaire.
For real. It's so true. All right. So let's talk about how you turned into leaving the doctor's office and then transitioning into an entrepreneur.
My fourth year of medical school. So before I even started medical school, I lived with one of my best friends and business mentors, Jesse Henry. During that time, I started my first company ever. Never had any business experience. Never had any family in business. And at that point, I was working as a scribe in the emergency room and had a lot of downtime. So started writing personal statements and essays for people to make a couple extra bucks. You know, I was making $10 an hour at the hospital just trying to get by. And started writing papers for my friends and family, their friends. And he's like, bro, you've got a business here. So that whole year, I actually quit the scribe job, did this full time, built a pretty massive business. We had like 20 people helping with personal statements and tutoring and papers, and got really caught the entrepreneur bug. What I made that year put me through Europe for 2 months traveling. And I'm just like, this is awesome. I have total freedom. At this point, I'm not working very hard. I'm just collecting, you know, the passive income that my team is generating. That business obviously fell apart when I moved to New York for medical school. I had no longer had a presence there. Didn't know how to kind of keep it self-sustaining. But I learned a lot about business, a lot about marketing, which led into my second business, which was a digital marketing service that I started while in medical school. So by my fourth year in medical school, I pretty much took that year off. To do business essentially full time, grew it into a 7-figure marketing agency that I sold at the end of my fourth year of medical school to start my residency training. Now, something horrible happened during my first year of residency training. Got in some trouble over social media with my department and essentially had to leave my training before I could complete it. At that point, that was like rock bottom, huge disappointment, kind of a media thing as well. I was like, my medical career was over, and absolutely horrible. I was in a depression for a while. Didn't know quite what to do. I didn't have my old business anymore. And my whole identity was kind of around as a doctor. It was a huge point of pride for me.
Yes.
And because of, you know, the media aspect of what happened too, because it did become a story, it kind of drove me to dig into that a little bit deeper. Like, why was this important in the media? What can I do to counter that? Who do I need to hire? What do I need to learn? And I went into this black hole, rabbit hole of knowledge and learning about the media, about PR, about what publicists do, about crisis management, about media publications and outlets and SEO and how Google and algorithms work. And I spent like 3 months just in a rabbit hole of knowledge. And this was right when the pandemic first started, about 2 years ago. It's January of 2020, like right before and then leading into. And my business partner at the time with the former company was also living with me and kind of also poor and had no idea what to do. So we saw that there was this hole in the market that there's this huge need for what I needed at the time, which was a publicist, which was help with the media. And I couldn't find any good help. I actually hired someone and it was a nightmare. And we started a company off of that. We called it Otter PR. We learned how to be publicists and we took some of those digital marketing clients that I already had and we offered to do PR for them for free. To kind of learn the game and get our feet in the water, create some case studies. And it was about 6 months of me and him wearing every hat, sales, marketing, PR, writing. Yeah. Partner's dyslexic. He can't write at all. He was writing press releases and emails all, It was horrible. And the service wasn't great, but we were very committed and we were able to generate some really good coverage for some really cool people. I just have to say,
that's like the ultimate comeback, to be dragged into media and then to become someone who's getting people into media. Like that's awesome.
Isn't it kind of wild? And I still think about it. Like if that wouldn't have happened, now we have 40 employees. It's been 2 years. We have two offices. We're one of the fastest growing digital PR agencies in the country. The big players all know who we are. We're tied in at every major media publication. We do crisis management, PR, media buying. We have a digital marketing arm. So it's just grown exponentially over the past 2 years. And yeah, I had some business know-how beforehand, but it was really this passion and the spark for what happened to me and me wanting to be able to not only fix my own situation, but other people's situations. And help people get positive media attention as well. And just to learn inside and out this whole game. And I did. And I'm doing something right now that nobody else is doing or able to do. Because I don't think anybody has the trauma that I have. I think it goes right back to that. And it's perfectly applicable. And, you know, I'm doing what I love. I have total freedom. I'm making more money than I know what to do with, and I don't even care about that. Yeah. What I care about is I'm building an amazing team. We're employing 40 incredible people that come into the office every day. It's a melting pot. They have so much fun. I unicycle in with my dog every morning, one of those electric unicycles. It's just such a cool life now, and we've been able to build this incredible family. And none of that would have happened without that trauma. And I practice medicine when I get home. Every day when I get home, I study and I create content. I have a YouTube channel. I create online health courses, which is honestly what I wanted to do anyways, which was be a kind of a subject matter expert in alternative medicine. And that's kind of what I'm doing in my 5 to 9. I say anyone with a 9 to 5, you're working part-time. That's all, only half the time you got in a day. And I every day when I get home is the same routine. I've got a studio set up, I study, I create content. I kind of finalize other stuff that's going on with my own podcast, do stuff like this where I can get in front of other audiences, hopefully inspire some people. But yeah, talk about a comeback story. I hate to, it really was just a wild whirlwind of a 2 years from the worst, lowest point that I've ever been at. Whole identity stripped away from me. To now building this massive agency that's been able to help and work with some of the most amazing people and companies and help people who are going through what I was going through has just been so rewarding. And for anyone who's backed into a corner listening to this, thinking they're at their lowest point, that's probably your turning point, because that was my turning point. You can't look at it as this is it. I'm beat. There's nothing I can do. I'm backed into a corner. You look at it as leverage. Use this. It's important to feel it, to really feel it. It's important to feel it, let it sink in, and then say, can't change it. What are you going to do about it? And go from there.
See, and that's why it says up above us, your true power lies in your story. Like, no matter what it is that you go through, there's something in there that's powerful. Like, I have a keynote presentation that I do called Becoming Who You Are Meant to Be. And I started talking about an apple bob contest that I did in the second grade. You know, and people are like, an apple bob contest? Really? So, but I took that story and turned it into something inspirational. Where it's like, if you think about it on the surface, you're like, what would you... You know, like, what are you going to talk about that with an apple bob contest? Like, that sounds so dumb. But I have a question here for you. So at your low point, who were you? What did you learn about yourself?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because when you're stripped away of everything, including the identity that you've kind of built over the years, you really have to look inside and say, who am I? What makes me tick? And really kind of figure that out before you take your next move. And at that point, I realized that what made me tick, what I value more than anything else, was freedom and building companies. I liked building things. And I realized that about myself because even in my medical training, when everyone else was 100% studying 14 hours a day, I was building companies. I built three companies while I was in medical school. Obviously, that says something about me as a person. And that's one thing that I kind of realized. Like, that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to build things. And I, the happiest that I ever was my fourth year of medical school, which I was taking off and running my business full time. So that's what I discovered. And it kind of brought me a sense of relief. I'm like, wow, I really didn't need to be a practicing clinician full time. What I needed was a sense of freedom. I needed to build things. And that's what I realized. And that's what I started to do. That's where I went from there.
See, and sometimes too, people don't realize that we're put in these situations. It's like we have to go through them to really become who we were meant to be. Because when I started my fitness business, I didn't really have a game plan. I was just trying to be everything for everyone. And, you know, that doesn't work. But I was trying to add boxing in and yoga in. I was just trying to throw in so many different things. And then I broke my knee. So I was competing in the high jump. I ruptured my patella tendon. Jeez. That was when I was told I would never run a jump again. And just throughout that process, like, I've always been positive. I've always had drive. But throughout that process, now I had something hanging over my head. Like, what if he's right? You know, it's like I still attacked my physical therapy with a vengeance. And then once I ran for that first time, I was like, I'm making a full comeback and I'm getting back on that track again. Like most people would go through something like that, but I'm never doing that again. I'm like, nope, I'm definitely doing that again because now I have a story. No, I'm not just another person that had surgery, you know? So now I can turn this into something that I can use to inspire other people. So when people are rehabbing, hey, listen, I got told XYZ to look inside. You know, there's no doctor out there that has the credentials to tell me about my willpower. None 100%. Whatsoever. And so when I ran into that doctor again, I want to say this was like 4 years later. And he's like, oh, I think I remember you. I said, oh, I never forgot you either. I was like, never, never. But going through that process helped shape me into what I'm doing now. And that's how Shut Up and Grind was born. Because I could have just took his definition of what my life was going to look like afterwards, and I could have ran with it. But yeah. I was like, no, like, that's not how this story's ending. It's not.
You actually brought up a really, really good point. And this kind of goes back into the roots of motivation. One, I think, is trauma. You don't ever want to be back at your rock bottom. Yeah. The other thing that can motivate people really well is the prospect of the future. So you got injured and you kind of saw yourself as this comeback story, as after you were able to rehab, now you're this, you know, inspirational character because you went through all of this, came back, and now you're crushing again. So really, the envisioning process is so powerful. Being able to see yourself in a certain place with a certain goal accomplished and then latch on to that as well as motivation can be a really powerful factor for people to get through hard times.
Yes.
And I think I use a combination of both, but it is really important to note and important for people to keep in mind. Have that goal in your mind for what it is that you see yourself doing and accomplishing, you know, 1 year, 5 year, 10 years down the road. Write it down, think about what it looks like, see it, and try and latch on to that in your day-to-day hustles and grinds.
Absolutely. Like, track and field was my life. I mean, I play almost all sports, but track and field, like, that's the one that gives me goosebumps every time I think about it. So when I got back out on that track in 2016 for the first time, I was actually mildly afraid of high jumping again, you know, just mildly. But right when I drove into the parking lot, I just started tearing up. Like, just from fighting through everything and getting myself to that point to where, like, I'm here again. And now every track meet I do is the same thing. I pull in, I just have a moment just thinking that someone tried to mentally stop this from happening. You know, maybe in his mind, he was doing the right thing. You know, saying, oh, well, in my experience, you know, this never ends well. Okay, cool. But in most things, there's percentages. Like my sister had a brain aneurysm burst. You know, there's a 20% survival rate. She's still here. You know, so it's like, if you just give me a glimmer of hope, I will be in that percentage. You know, so it's like, he didn't give it to me, so I took it for myself.
Yeah, so it's such good pearls of knowledge there, and people, I hope they're getting some motivation from it, taking some lessons from us. But there really there's so much to latch onto, and so many people out there who are also hustling. So it's you got to keep that in mind too. You know, if you really want a 1% life, you want a 1% body, 1% freedom. You gotta figure out where the motivation is going to come from, whether that's through trauma, through a vision of yourself in the future. But really, there's so much opportunity out there, and life is better after you've overcome those obstacles.
Yes. And I want to just emphasize, there's opportunities out there for everyone, absolutely everyone. Like, I'm part of a program here in Rhode Island called the Social Enterprise Greenhouse, where we help people in low-income areas. We help them become entrepreneurs. Like, we have multiple programs, but when I tell you, this is like college level stuff that we put them through. It's absolutely for free. So we can help someone go from idea to pitch in for funding, you know, in a 12-week span. And just a lot of people, they just don't know that there's opportunities out there. Most chambers of commerce have free programs for everyone. Like, if you need help with anything business-wise, they have free programs. So, and again, that's everywhere. And so that's one of the biggest things I try to help people understand, is that the opportunities are there if you look for them.
Yeah. And you don't have to be a rock star. You don't have to be a world-class athlete. You just have to be better than you were yesterday.
Yes.
And there's nobody who can't apply that to their life. Completely agree. That's a great lesson. This applies to everybody, and there's never an excuse. If there's a situation you can't change, there's no reason to think about it and to hover on it. All you can do is say, can't change it, move on, figure out how to get better.
Yes, amen.
Robert, any kind of final things you want to touch on for value on the audience here, value for the audience?
Yeah, let's talk about your podcast.
Sure, we'd love to. So Mentors Collective was kind of born out of something I used to do casually and for fun. I used to find mentors on social media that have accomplished things that I respected, and I got them on the phone. And I networked. I asked them questions that I thought would serve me, serve my company, serve my purpose. And after about a year of doing that, I'm like, these are conversations that people should have access to. Yeah. So Mentors Collective was born. I have high achievers on there in all walks of life, whether that be meditation, business, marketing, relationships, dating. Anything that I'm curious about personally, where I want to grow, where I want to learn stuff that I feel like can benefit my life, I have them on the show. We have that conversation, and it's been a game changer. People have really loved it. I've been able to meet and network with some amazing people, and I hope everyone's able to check it out. I think we're about 50 episodes in. It's on every major streaming platform. And hey, if any listeners or yourself want to come on the show and lend some subject matter expertise to the audience, we'd love to hear from you.
I'm down. Absolutely. All right. That's great. Well, Jay, thank you very much for taking the time. This was a dynamic conversation. Like, these conversations go by way too fast.
They do. Like a blink of an eye.
I know. Like, I got your private chat. I was like, wow, already? I was like, damn.
And I got to run over to a business lunch right now across the street. I apologize for that. I would love to talk to you all day. This has been so fun. Great back and forth, great chemistry. I hope your listeners enjoyed it. Yes. Got even one pearl of knowledge out of this conversation that hopefully can spark a change in their life. Then it's a huge win, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be putting on like a panel style show once a month where I'm going to bring back, because I mean, I've had over 100 guests now, and I want to start bringing back like, say, five to six people at a time to just have like a round table type of conversation. If you're interested, I'll let you know.
That'd be cool. I would love to do that.
All right. Awesome. Well, again, thank you very much for joining, and head over to that lunch.
Robert, pleasure meeting you. Glad to make a new friend. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Take care, man. Right. So that was Jay. If you're tuning in late, make sure you go back and watch the entire show. This was another very, very solid conversation about helping you get out of your own way, helping you rid yourself of those negative self-talk, those little voices in your head that plant the seeds of doubt. We want to get those out of there, figure out what it is you want to do, and then work like hell to make it happen. That's all I got for you today. I will be back on Monday on We About to Get Deep.